College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss back and forth banter, as we call it, some college football. We're going to start with week two recap like we do per normal. Of course, we'll get into week preview and predictions, go over the betting lines. Of course, we'll cover all the marquee matchups, but also cover those under the radar games, upsets of the week. Like I said, the betting lines against the spread, all that good stuff. We generally end the show with our favorite segment, the crafty crappy pick of the week, where my co-host Marshall just throws a shitty game at me and I pick it. And you know what? We're doing pretty good once again. We got a track record of doing good. And we're doing pretty good this weekend. This season. See, I'm screwing it up anyway. It was, you know, there wasn't, speaking of marquee matchups, it's not like it was just plump full of marquee matchups, right? We know that. But, you know, the biggest matchup, Ohio State, Oregon, got the job done 35-28. Ohio State just couldn't quite come back enough to get over the hump and finish off their comeback. Of course, Iowa and Iowa State, Iowa dominant two performances. I know they only won by 10, not as much against Indiana, but very dominant. They have two very, very good wins. But that's the thing. We talked about games under the radar. Games under the radar like A&M and Colorado. You know, A&M just barely snuck by. Notre Dame barely snuck by against Toledo. USC went down, I was going to say swinging, but they didn't do much swinging against Stanford. My co-host is very happy from the outcome from that, the aftermath, so to speak. Arkansas whooped up on Texas. BYU beat a ranked Utah. And, you know, I talked about it last week, Miami, Appalachian State, watch out for that game. Whether it's against the spread, they can sneak under, or maybe just an upset. Miami was able to finish that one off. So we're going to talk, you know, a fair amount about week two. And, you know, we do have a couple of big games, no doubt, when it comes to week three, Cincinnati at Indiana. That's a big game for them because they don't have a lot of, you know, big names always. So that, you know, they got to win that. Alabama, Florida. You know, that could be a really interesting matchup. Auburn and Penn State is a really big matchup this early in the season in September. Arizona State on the road against BYU. I mentioned BYU. They got themselves a quarterback. I'll tell you that. Fresno State, who hung in there against Oregon on the road at UCLA, at UCLA. You know, this September's generally can be a little misleading. Not just off the rankings. Thank God. We were just talking about that before we got on. Thank God they don't do, you know, the real rankings until later in the year now. When you look back at it, such a silly – like, I get it. You got to rank something because it's also TV-driven. Hey, this is the number so-and-so team against the number so-and-so team. Or this is a good team. They're ranked eighth or whatever. I know, you got to do some sort of – you know, rankings, but in the fact that the AP poll has been here since like the mid-30s. So I get some of that. But, man, this year, like every September, but especially this year, just throw the rankings out right now. Of course, some teams and whatnot you can depend on, but you just don't know what exactly you're going to get. But before we get into it, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. You can find it in a number of places. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadope radio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Open. Download the show directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want. You can find it under the Rope It Dope Radio podcast on Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99 a month. The best of live TV and on-demand, all your apps in one place with access to over 7,000 apps, no annual contract, of course, no hidden fees. And if you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate, you get 3 months free of HBO Max. If you do the Premier package, you get HBO Max. You get Showtime. That's already included, which is big for boxing fans. I do a boxing show as well, as you know. And with those Choice and Ultimate packages, don't forget, you get the regional sports network. So there's no additional fees. The last few years, we've seen more cable companies, you know, delete that out of their package, and you got to pay more. That's DirecTV Stream. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall. And, you know, we got some good news. Well, good news for him out of USC. Up here in Minnesota with PJ Fleck, you know, you could take the Mississippi all the way down to New Orleans and then just paddle over down the coast. Well, no, you can't, actually. What am I saying? That's going to be a weird way to go. My point is, I'm a little afraid of PJ Fleck on the radar of your squad, but we're going to lead with that. If you had something else you're going to lead with, add that in too. But you got to be feeling pretty good, even though your team got whooped up on their, you know, what is a really good rivalry. It's been kind of one-sided of late, though, in Stanford's favor.
Yeah, and I think this was the last straw, but I've been saying the last straw for about 6 years now. So, well, not about three, for sure. I've wanted him out for a long time. And I think many USC fans are happy. I think most of the fan base is happy. There were some F-word Clay Helton chants at the last game. Like, you know, when your fans are saying that, and that's normally something that doesn't happen in college football. Like, yes, college fans are rowdy and will get drunk and tailgate, but you normally don't say F the head coach. Like, that's a pretty strong emotional push of we're fed up with this guy. And you lost to a team who the week prior looked like they were a Division II football team when they played Kansas State. I mean, this is a Stanford team who pretty much has fallen down in the past 5 to 6 years, because when we first started this podcast, they were a really prominent, respectful program. And Stanford really hasn't had much go their way since, you know, they've had a couple of, like, you know, Luck and McCaffrey. They've had a list of great players, but really nothing's happened. And I guess this finally was the straw that finally ended it. So I'm happy he's gone. I think this shows the hand of the admin though at USC. Of clearly they knew they probably wanted to fire him. And why they didn't do it in the offseason, when you could have found maybe a new head coach to already begin rebuilding the team this year. I think that's stupid. But also 2 years ago, when people thought we were going to fire him, he was like, oh, well, we want him back. The players want him, blah, 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 bullshit. And then last year was more blah, 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 BS. So we finally got rid of him. Yeah, I think it's a step in the right direction for a team. As I was telling you before the podcast, clearly I'm a USC fan, but I think with you get the right coach in here, and within a 2 year period, you can be back to contending for being a Final Four spot team. I'm not saying that we're going to all of a sudden become like the Alabama Clemson, who's like a shoe-in, but
Alabama West.
Yeah. But there was a time where really when in the 2000s, from 2000 to 2010, pretty much every USC game was seen as a must-watch TV. They were a top 10 team in the preseason, almost guaranteed. And they were one of the better programs in the country. And in Clay Helton's whole time as a head coach, he was miserable as an underdog on the road. His record as underdog was hideous. And his only great win I can recall, truly, was when they won that incredible Rose Bowl against Penn State. And that was with Sam Darnold being quarterback, and he had a hell of a quarterback. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve credit for it, but that was really their only shining moment. And that's tough when you're supposed to be a top dominant program. So I'll stop there. But yeah, the fact that I have one awesome game where I was like, I remember crying, cause I was like, oh my God, we did something again. I was happy. That's been our one shining moment for about the past 10 years. And that is a school where you should be able to recruit and get a loaded roster of kids from California and shit, kids from Texas and Florida. You have USC on your name. And so I hope they bring in a right hire. you have seen programs.
We're not going to be able to do the podcast anymore if PJ Fleck goes to USC. I'll just put that out there.
That's fair. Or, you know, and the first ESPN report, I literally heard this driving home from school in my car, and a reporter from California who broke the story, or someone on ESPN's California side, I don't know, whatever reporter, had mentioned, do you talk to Kiffin? And I think you do. I'm not sure if he'll go back, but I mean, the guy, since he's left there, he's established, look what he did at FAU and what he's doing at Ole Miss. I mean, I don't know if he would take it. Clearly, he probably doesn't forget being left on a tarmac, but I think that's a name that will get called. I'm not
there
sure.
There may have been a reason that he didn't continue as a coach, though, too.
And who knows? Maybe he doesn't want to go back to you either. Who knows? But I think that's a name that will pop up along with others. I'm happy the day finally happened. Again, I thought they should have not done it after week two, but hey, whatever. Moving forward, hopefully in a couple of years we're back on the big scene. That was a nice Monday evening, afternoon, breaking news college football segment, which we really don't get many of those. So I was happy to see that. For my, I guess, opening day take, which I'm like to do start the show, and I'll be quick, is I enjoyed seeing Texas get smoked. Speaking of former USC people, of USC, the team, and Kiffin, also Sarkisian, who is now the head coach of Texas.
He had a pretty good run there, too. now that he's out the bottle, he's better.
Yeah. And to give them credit, Texas did have a nice win week one. You played a underdog team who really wasn't underdog because no one was really sleeping past them in their Asian Cajuns, and Texas had a nice victory. But then you walked over to Arkansas, and this is a team who appears to have hired the right coach, and they're making progress gradually. Again, this is a school that for a long time was seen as a joke and kind of a school to beat up on, and Bielema didn't really have a great run there. But Arkansas, after the first quarter of this game, it was 3-0, and you assumed, okay, like it's going to be a low scoring, run the ball, and the offensive struggle kind of game battle. And then, like, the floodgates opened, and a Texas defense, which was, you know, getting a decent amount of respect from their week one performance, that defense, maybe they got tired, maybe they started cramping up, maybe they were hearing rude things said to them by the Arkansas fans, I'm not sure. But it went from 3-0 to Arkansas winning 40-21. And the 21 that Texas scored was pretty much all in like garbage time, where you're assuming Arkansas kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit. I believe at one point the score was 30-14 or 40-14. You know, so Texas did score, but the game was never really in doubt. So, I'm not a Texas guy. I got a close family friend that's OU, so I'll always do horns down. But that's a nice win by Arkansas, a tough loss by Texas. But yeah, if you're Arkansas, man, you're in probably the toughest division in football in the whole country. That SEC East is absolutely insane. But a huge win against a ranked opponent, a beatdown, Chris. And if you're Texas, you're like, man, we look good against the Raging Cajuns. And I don't know if Arkansas should have a ranking next to them, or if Texas was overhyped, or if they just got their butt kicked. But I didn't see this game going that way. Arkansas was a 6-point favorite, but to be up pretty much 24-28 points the whole second half, that was
Arkansas
a surprise.
Was a 6-point favorite?
Yeah, I believe, or anywhere from, it was 4-6. The line moved throughout the week.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty sure. Yeah,
I didn't know that. I thought it was the opposite. I thought Texas was the favorite.
Or maybe I'm fooling myself. Let me double check on that. Will you give your thoughts on the game? I could be being dyslexic with numbers.
Yeah. I mean, they just got beat. It would just look like a Texas game where they're coming off a really solid win over the Raging Cajuns, and they got beat. I can't really add much more than you, because you broke it down really well. And you could check that if you want. I was surprised at that. And I got to admit, I would have probably taken Texas in that anyway.
I'm sorry. You're right, brother. Texas was a 6-point favorite. My bad. With the score and the way the game went, I confused myself. But yeah, the Longhorns were a 6-point favorite.
Yeah, it really kind of – it just – you know, I guess it's a ringing endorsement for former head coaches at USC. I don't know. I just had to find a way to take a shot. But I don't know. Texas is just Texas right now, dude. I don't know what's going to get them out of the funk. They can't. They're just not consistent. They can't come back that next week. They kind of remind me of my Hurricanes. At least my Hurricanes have had a breakthrough season in there, where Texas is still pretty much waiting for that. Speaking of what could be a breakthrough season, Oregon beats OSU, Ohio State on the road, which is not easy to do, 35-28. A couple of things really stand out to me. You know, Ohio State put up 612 freaking yards, 484 through the air, just a buck 28 on the ground, whereas that's where it kind of stands out. 269 on the ground for Oregon. The running back had a huge day, Verdell or whatever his name is, but also Brown, the quarterback, who's a dual threat. They only had four penalties, no turnovers, and 8 of 16 on third downs. That third down efficiency was key. We saw some chinks and holes in Ohio State in the opening week against Minnesota, but it is kind of weird because, you know, Oregon looked mediocre against a quality Fresno club. So this one kind of not shocked me, but I did pick Ohio State just based off, and this is what September in college football is like, based off of just looking at Fresno, like, man, I'm not sure if they're as good as they were in 2018-2019.
Basically, one of the biggest bets I heard all week from all the different websites and podcasts and just analyst people I listen to. Excuse me. was that you got to bet Ohio State team total, and the team total for Ohio State was 40 points. So if you're not a huge football gambler, you can always bet on who you think wins the over-under, but there always will be a team total prop too. And to hear so many people think that Ohio State was going to score 40-plus, I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to drop an easy 40, that should be a pretty confident win. And maybe to the credit of people who made that gambling choice, this was an Oregon defense, Chris, who last week against Fresno State, when Fresno State went to the red zone five times, had five touchdowns. So I could perceive how when you watched Ohio State's offense, who did a couple of like bubble screens against your Gophers, and a five-yard bubble screen turns into a 70-yard touchdown, you're thinking, okay, like I could see how this offense could light up the scoreboard. But they had 7 points in the first half, and it took them a little while to get going. And again, you're looking at a little bit of a garbage time scores to some extent. So a massive tip of the cap to Oregon's defense. You win it on the road in a hell of an environment. Ohio State's arena normally sits anywhere from 102 to, I think, 106,000. So
stadium. That'd be a big arena.
So you had your toughest road challenge in the past 2 years, because no one really had any battles on the road last year. So I think, Chris, maybe that we had a perfect example of a team who was just kind of lollygagging week one, like, oh, dude, we got Ohio State on the map, and we just got to get through Fresno. And they did get through Fresno kind of at the last second. But yeah, tip of the cap to Oregon's defense. And maybe there is, you know, kind of that bulletin board angle that, you know, people hear, you know, like the kids got social media nowadays too. So if you see the whole world is betting Ohio State's going to drop an easy 40 on you, that probably would be a reason for motivation. So credit to the defense. And that was the defense that didn't even have the future number one NFL draft pick in the league with playing. So a massive props to Oregon. They came out, they played offense as they were supposed to. They finished their team total of what Vegas predicted, but their defense slowed down Ohio State. So credit to them. And that's a really nice victory. And hey, the Pac-12 actually is kind of got off to a nice start for a conference that really for the handful of past years has been more of a joke in the national picture than anything.
Yeah. What Crystal Ball has done for the offense, the defense lines there at Oregon, it really makes me think it's sustainable. Speaking of offense and defensive line, Iowa, who's known for those two ingredients, is had that just dominant win over Indiana, who Indiana had a good year last year, as we know, over there 6-1 or whatever, challenged Ohio State, that went, you know, that same team that went to the finals, or, you know, the final last year, and then turn right around. And sure, they gave, you know, like 93 yards to the Hall, but that's slowing them down on 20 carries. And they ended up, you know, beyond like a nice long pass to a wide receiver, Purity didn't do much at all. I mean, I think it was like 89 yards and three picks with the other 23 throws he had, that he got benched. And here you are, you know, eight games or nine games in a row. Iowa is looking like, I don't know, in some ways, I'm not saying their path is completely clear to get to the conference final, but I think their path is clear to get to the final. They're looking good this year, even though their quarterback doesn't do much. They didn't really do much at all. Actually, it's kind of crazy, because all of a sudden you look and you say, oh, third down conversion, 4 of 15. But, you know, Iowa State was 3 of 12. They only passed for 106 yards. They only ran for 67 yards. It was just one of those dominant, with the box score doesn't tell you how dominant this game was, considering it was a tight game and they were a 4.5-point underdog.
Yeah, and, you know, just looking at the box score, ESPN a lot of times for big games will show like little video clips. And one of the video clips I see is of Iowa stripping an Iowa State running back on the 5-yard line for a scoop and score touchdown. And if you're Iowa State, man, you got to be pretty pissed off, because you actually had a hell of a pretty good game. Iowa's quarterback, Petras, who really, for all we know, is not that good, was 11 of 21 for a 106 with one touchdown. That's a 33 quarterback rating. And Iowa ran the ball, which normally they are pretty damn good at. It seems Iowa always has a future lineman who will be in the NFL with a running back who's like a third, fourth round pick. Iowa ran the ball 39 times and had 67 yards. So Iowa ran the ball at a 1.7 yard clip. Like, Iowa State's defense came to play, but Iowa's did too. And Brock Purdy, again, a guy who a couple years ago I was high on, and last year I saw him regress, and I called this out, and I have not heard many people say this. I was listening to ESPN people give this guy all sorts of love, and I think you got to check that back a little bit. He was 13 of 27 for a 138. And so this team, who was preseason ranked 7th, who everyone fell in love with, again, I think Purdy had a talented wide receiver running back who were NFL talent. And even again this year, Breece Hall, Iowa State's running back, is a future NFL pick. But I think you're realizing that either maybe the offense, again, when it's in a big game, struggles, or Purdy just he's not a great quarterback. Because to see him get benched in a game which is like probably the biggest game of the year in reality for Iowa and Iowa State. I mean, I'm sure as a Hawkeye fan, you're looking for bigger deals, but it's a huge rivalry game. A 13 of 27 rating for a 138 with three picks. That's tough. And obviously, you know, you normally don't see college quarterbacks on top ranked teams get benched, but credit to Iowa. I know that I continue to hear people say that Petras is not a great quarterback, but maybe we're going to see another one of those Iowa type teams, Chris, where, hey, if you can run the ball, control it, you know, at night, that team almost never seems to lose at home ever. I see their next game is versus Kent. Then they got Colorado State. They go to Maryland. Then they get Penn State. I think if you're Iowa, you're going to ask for that Penn State to be about a 7 o'clock nighttime kickoff. Then you got Purdue, Wisconsin, Northwestern. Yeah, they have a nice looking schedule. You're right, my friend. They do have a schedule that's beneficial, and credit to them. They're bumped up to number 5 now in the polls. So a very nice start. They dismantled Indiana, who had an injured quarterback. And now you pretty much knocked a quarterback to the bench. So a very good year for the Kinnick Hawkeyes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, Michigan beat Washington handedly. They just ran the you-know-what out of the ball. I mean, they really did. They So that was like not a huge surprise, but Washington is back to the drawing board, and maybe they're going to need another year to be the team that people thought they may have been, myself included. I thought they'd be better than they've shown thus far. Another well, that wasn't really a West Coast game, but this was a West Coast game. Utah at BYU. You know, Utah loves to run the ball, as we know, and play good defense. Bernard, you know, had 12 carries for a 146. So they ran the ball pretty well. They couldn't run it that much, unfortunately for them anyway. But the combination of Algeria or something like that, big back, or runs big. He's like 220, not the tallest dude, but he made a lot of impressive runs for BYU in the victory, 26-17. But Hall threw for 3 touchdowns, and he also ran for 92 yards, and he barely stepped out of bounds. Otherwise, it would have been even probably tack on another 30 or 40 yards to that run. Hall is a playmaker. I mean, this guy may not have, you know, the ball skills of Wilson, but man, this dude is a baller for college football, stuff anyway. And it's kind of cool. His dad, Max Hall, was on the sidelines. He played at BYU quarterback 2006 to 2009. Just so happens he was the quarterback of the BYU squad that last beat Utah. So kind of fun. His dad looks like he's ready to go. Like if he had some years left, he might be able to be, you know, a COVID year redshirt or whatever. They look damn good. And, you know, they did make it official, by the way, for the Big 12 in the coming years. And BYU is one of those squads, along with Houston, Cincinnati, and Central Florida, which I thought the Big 12 did a pretty good job considering the place they were in. We'll talk about that some other time. I don't know why I brought it up that late. But BYU looked damn good, and they got another big game, non-conference, to prove it this week against Arizona State.
Yeah, playing the fighting Herm Edwards, that'll be a tough game. And to give BYU credit, this is a school that for the past handful of years really does go out on a limb to play anyone they want and push themselves for a hard schedule. I suppose to some extent, kind of making your own schedule does help, but they gave us the joy of watching that great game versus Coastal Carolina last year. I mean, I know Utah's a rivalry game, but even so, Utah, and then you got Arizona State. Like they pretty much that school is never really afraid to play anyone. So I give them credit for that. Now they got NFL quarterback who was playing yesterday. So maybe this is another quarterback who could be a fun prospect. Not saying it'll be Zach Wilson, but maybe this is another year in a row of a BYU quarterback that can bring that team success. Yeah. And they've normally not had that athletic of a quarterback that you're talking about either, Chris. Yeah. They got to have pretty high hopes in that place. And speaking of high hopes and teams who take care of business, just to quickly run down it, Bama killed Mercer 48-14. Georgia beat UAB 56-7. That point spread was like 22. So if you bet Georgia, man, you picked a good week to pick them. Oklahoma won 76-0 against Western Carolina. I think Lincoln Riley was a little pissed off, maybe that Tulane made his defense look bad. And Clemson won 49-3. So they took out their little upset attitudes on South Carolina State. And Cincinnati 42-7 over Murray State. But the one game that was really close in the top 10, and I know we talked about it, was the Texas A&M Colorado. A&M didn't score until the fourth quarter to give themselves 10 points. This was a 7-3 game midway through the fourth, and A&M did win 10-7. But man, if you're Jimbo and you're telling everyone that this is our year to contend and win the SEC and fight the Bamas and the Georgias, you almost had a hiccup that probably would have been fair to say maybe even too much to get over now. But they pull out a win, a 10-7 win for Jimbo's guys. I did just see on ESPN, it's been ticking down, that he will be having a new quarterback come in. So obviously a quarterback injury is never ideal for anyone.
First quarter, too.
Yeah, and that's tough. And, you know, and obviously that changed the whole way of the game. But still, when you are playing the school who, when you're fifth in the country, and you want to remain up there, even when injuries do happen, it's that next man up mentality. And, hey, to give Colorado credit, because this has really nothing to do with A&M's quarterback. Colorado ran the ball 38 times for .171, and A&M ran the ball 29 times for .97. So the line of scrimmage, for better or worse, was controlled by Colorado. And I know you said that that's a team who your Gophers got to face this following week. Maybe they'll be a little hungover from that tough loss. But Colorado's a school that pretty much every year that are kind of going to win anywhere from 5 to 7 games. And I know they've had a super talented quarterback the last handful of seasons who I believe went to NFL or was at least a prospect. They're trying to revamp their quarterback spot now. But that was a score that every time I kept checking ESPN, Chris, I was like, is A&M for real? Like 7-0, 7-3, 7-3, 7-3. And A&M pulled that one off. But yeah, if you're an Aggies fan, that was a close call. And I guess we'll see how the backup quarterback does. I believe it's Calzada. But again, they are top. They're fifth in the country now. And you are on pace to have yourself fighting for a top spot. But when you get beat the line of scrimmage handedly by a team who is not ranked, that would probably put up a couple of red flags if you're an Aggies fan.
Yeah, just to bounce back, I meant to add this about that Washington-Michigan game. Washington had 293 through the air. They're playing catch-up a lot of the times, obviously, threw the ball 37 times. Michigan only threw it 15 times for 44 yards, but 343, that number, total yards, 343 is the number of yards they got on the ground. 56 carries, 6.1. So they were definitely wearing their ass down, no doubt about it. My Gophers, as I mentioned, had a stinky third quarter, otherwise pulled the win off 31-26. There were a couple other, like I mentioned, Notre Dame is grinding it out against teams. Toledo, I think, might be better than Florida State, but they're finding a way to win. But sometimes you live and die with that style. You just don't know. Appalachian State, like I mentioned, almost beat my Canes 25-23. They definitely snuck under the spread that was mentioned last week. A really good game. Pittsburgh beat Tennessee on the road. I watched some of that. Also, a couple other games I wanted to at least brief by. TCU California looked pretty interesting on paper. TCU keeps it going 34-32. What is the other? Oh, I thought Houston and Rice might be decent. Man, Houston just smoked Rice 44-7. Another game that was tight was Liberty and Troy. Speaking of these under the radar non-power five, Troy almost beat them, but 21-13. So like I said, there was some interesting that 55-50 Memphis on the road sneaks out a win. Oh, that Kentucky-Missouri, that's probably something you'll talk about too. And, of course, Florida State getting beat literally at the buzzer. It was their worst loss to a team that's currently in the FCS since 1959, William and Mary. And as a, Miami Hurricanes follower, I can't say that I'm too bummed about that. Any other games that you'd like to highlight before we get to week three and some of these big matchups?
I will say that my boy Lane Kiffin, Hottie Toddy, Ole Miss, they beat Austin Peay. They whooped up on them, so that's good. But I see Ole Miss now plays Tulane. And Tulane just dropped like a 60 spot, and they dropped like 35 on Oklahoma. So I cannot wait to see the over-under for two schools who maybe they want to play some defense, but really don't give a shit. I think this Tulane Ole Miss game might have an over-under of like 70, and I'll probably want to go over 70. So that could be a fun one to watch. But back to Mizzou, they always do play Kentucky closely. They never seem to beat up on that school. Kentucky normally seems to have an edge on them. I would say I heard wrong about the perceived notions of this game. The theory was that Kentucky's got this young, talented quarterback who can throw. And so my perception going into the game was, is that this Will Lewis has a cannon arm, which I heard a couple of analysts say about Kentucky. That, okay, like Kentucky's got a quarterback that can throw. Like, that's incredible. Like, they've always had a good defense and a good running game. But then you go to the box scores, and Missouri did lose the game. But Will Lewis, this Kentucky quarterback with an arm, was 10 of 18 for $179, which isn't special at all. But Kentucky ran the ball 52 times for 340 yards. Holy shit. Mizzou ran the ball 24 times for $104. So as I was just telling my friend and co-host that A&M outplayed, was outplayed by Colorado at the line of scrimmage. When a team runs the ball and you curse 52 times for 340, that is a massive red flag. Like, that shows they've had the ball for almost what probably feel like the whole damn game, and that you're getting 6 yards a carry and you ran the ball 52 times. That is literally a gut check of like, dude, you ain't stopping us. We're just going to run the ball down your damn throat. And I don't know, that I guess that scares me maybe more than it should. I know we're only a second game of the year, but those numbers, like the 52 carries is something we would maybe see occasionally from like a Georgia or Bama team, Chris, back in the day, but 52 carries at 6.5 yards a clip, that's a sign that Missouri's D-line is just got massively outplayed. Maybe Kentucky's got a great offense, but that's just a scary number to see. You normally don't see that high of a clip in a competitive SEC game, but man, Kentucky ran the ball down our damn throat. We deserve that loss.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But yeah, you're right. That I did watch a good chunk of that second half, actually late last night, watching on the SEC channel. So getting into week three, though, top 25 matchups. We got a couple of them. Alabama, Florida. Florida's at home. Can they push Alabama? We'll see. Obviously, you got to favor Alabama. They're 15.5-point favorites. They were almost 19.5. I think it went up to 20-something. I think it went up to over 20 against Miami, and obviously they went over 20. Penn State, Auburn. I'm actually just going to go right out and say I got Penn State winning that. They're a 6-point favorite. I have Penn State winning it. I think their defensive line is damn good. They got an experienced quarterback. I'm not saying he's a great quarterback, but I don't know if you could put great and Bo Ryan in the same sentence either. So I got Penn State in that one. And then I mentioned this earlier, the 9:15 Central and 9:45 Central. Of course, the last one, Fresno State and Ookla, UCLA, that's on the Pac-12 network, which nobody has. But the Pac-12 after dark, Arizona State and BYU, we'll get into that in a second. Any chance that Florida, who's trying to figure out exactly who's going to play and stay in the game, maybe it'll be two quarterbacks, maybe it'll just be Emory. Any chance that Florida, pushes them? And then let's get into that Auburn and Penn State game as well.
I think that last year Florida had one of the best teams they've had in a long time, and that team came up a touchdown short with some poor decision clock management by their head coach. But if you lost to, and Grant, Bama was better last year too, but I think that Florida's last year was their best chance to beat Bama, and they almost did. But I think that I don't think they can. I think last year was a good look. And again, I know both schools lost a tremendous amount of talent, but I think that the way Bama has looked so far, I don't see them slipping up to Florida. I think the point spread shows that there is a difference of skills and obviously a quarterback situation. I mean, if you're Florida, you're still trying to rework an offense that had a very talented tight end with a talented quarterback. Like, that's really hard to replace, Chris, when you have two guys that really carried a huge amount of your offense. Now you're trying to just get a new system going, you could say. And I don't think that's easy to do, especially when you got Bama for the third week of your season. So, yes, I think Bama will win that game and cover like they always seem to do, or at least always be a good first half bet, which is pretty much always seems to be a guarantee. I think last year Bama went like 12-2 in the first half, and I know they're already 2-0 again this year. They seem to always come out ready to play in the first 30 minutes. And I think that trend will continue to happen, sir.
Well, they definitely were ready against my Hurricanes. They came out like gangbusters. What do you think? You think Bo Ryan, who's, you know, this famous quarterback because his pops, you know, had something to do with the university of the football team. What do you think here? I mean, Penn State, I'm not going to say they're a surprise team this year, but they're looking pretty damn good considering they haven't gotten a whole lot of their offense. At some point, that's going to click even more. How do you see this one? I already made my pick on this. Two teams you really don't really talk well of.
No. I guess. Jesus.
There's no ties in college football.
Shit. Lightning delays, storm outage, power outages due to storm. I'm gonna lean SEC, I guess. Damn it. I'll take Auburn.
He's going with Bo. Believe in Bo.
Bo Nix. All right. Yeah. Another. Jesus. I guess. Man. Yeah. I don't know. Penn State.
A ringing endorsement for Bo and the Auburn Tigers.
Yes.
I guess. Man, I guess. That's the quote. I mean, that's fair. Number 19 ASU at number 23 BYU, according to ESPN's Football Power Index. It gives the BYU, what are they, the Utes? No, that's Utah. What's BYU again?
BYU.
The Crusaders? No, I'm just kidding. The Cougars. The Cougars.
Yeah, Cougars. Yeah.
They're not the Crusaders. I'm just kidding, people. 53.3. Well, let's keep it moving. 53.3. Index ESPN Power Football. Look at the, I mean, Hall is new to college football as far as being, you know, the main man, but Daniels and Hall is a hell of a matchup here for quarterbacks. 3.5 point favorite on the road, so that's about 6.5. ASU has shown more offense. The starter that they got, Daniels, has been young. Now it's his time to shine. How do you see this one playing out, man? I really think this is going to be a good game. And I'll say it right now, 51.5, I'm going to go over.
Okay, so I think in college football we've seen this scenario happen a lot. BYU maybe just had one of their biggest wins in the past decade. Utah is their biggest rival, and they beat them for the first time in 10 years. So in college football, this goes one of two ways. It either goes that, hey, you had your biggest win and God knows how long, you're going to come out flat. Or
I like how you brought God into it, too. That was nice.
or unintentionally, or you go on like, or you come out flat and it's a losing streak. So either you come out flat and lay a dud, and you're like, okay, well, it was hangover. They had too much fun. Well, actually, they don't drink. If you're too happy, I guess. Or you go on like a 3-game winning streak. So this is literally a flip a quarter situation. To where, I mean, Arizona State, they do matter as this obviously is their opponent, who's a good team. But it's a matter of just what kind of practice does BYU have this week? Is it, guys, this was such a remarkable win, let's build off of it? Or is it, you almost get into a funk? And Chris, we've done this podcast for so long and watched college football for even longer. It literally is. It's a 50-50 shot that this could go one way or the other. Just because these are college kids. I mean, in the NFL, it's one thing, these guys are getting paid. They're older. They've been through the college years. But in college football, there's such a rush of energy and momentum. And I can only imagine like the locker room after they won last night or against Utah a couple nights ago. But yeah, how you feed off of that and how you come back from it is so hard to predict. And I will say for Arizona State, though, Herman Edwards, since he's been there, they've pretty much started every season really good. He's had them struggle a bit at the end, Chris, as you've noticed, and part of that could just be simply the Pac-12 schedule. But Herman Edwards, pretty much every year he started off his seasons really well. So you're facing a really well-coached team that always does start the year off pretty hot. Now you're just going to have to try to manage your emotions. So I will take Arizona State to win. I think that the emotional toll spins off BYU in a negative way, and I think Arizona State wins. But if BYU wins this game, I think they'll go on a nice 4-5 game run, and you can look back at saying they beat Utah and they really built their momentum off that. But I will take the Sun Devils to pull off the victory, sir.
All right, and I'm going BYU. I'm drinking the Jesus juice. Now, it fits their stadium. Fits like 66,000 people. I remember on the broadcast they said something like they have like over 50,000 season ticket holders for a 60. I mean, that's intense. All right, so we're gonna kind of do some quick little, you know, under the radar type, you know, maybe against the spread, upsets of the week type thing. I think Central Florida, I'm looking at this 7-point favor against Louisville. Louisville didn't look that good early. I like that. But Minnesota, Colorado, I believe they were a 1-point favor when it opened, and now it's down to 2. I don't know, man. I hate to pick against my Gophers, but that's one that's going to be a tough one. Cincinnati at Indiana. You know, Indiana has so many returning, I think 17 different starters off a great year. The problem is, and I know there's some Indiana listeners from the Grueling Truth, but the problem is, well, we're going to find out about this team. I'm not trying to take anything away from last year, right? That no-show against Iowa was like a head-scratcher. Is it COVID year they had this big jump up? Because they should be right in this game, and they got to prove it right here that they are this quality, you know. Allen is a good coach. They had a great year last year. I'm not taking any credit away from them, but we are going to see some of these teams that did good last year or didn't do good last year, and it had more to do with COVID all around than anything. I don't believe it. I think they got a good coach and everything like that, but I wonder, will Cincinnati beat Indiana? They're only a 3.5-point spread, but that's on the road. I like West Virginia to beat Virginia Tech. So does Vegas. Michigan State, Miami. I'm actually going to go with Miami in that one. I think that they will finally kind of put something together. Could a decent Purdue team sneak up against Notre Dame? Notre Dame's been playing mediocre talent and barely getting by. There is some interesting under-the-radar games this week, man, that I'm really feeling. Mississippi State, Memphis is another one. I may pick Memphis as an underdog, just a slight underdog at home to win that one. What says you about some of the games I mentioned and maybe some other games that you're thinking about here?
I think that Memphis game should be a lot of fun. It appears Memphis has found another super fast running back, which I know to you is shocking. The kid last week had like 18 carries for 190 yards. It's like, I don't know, no matter what, Memphis seems to find like track star running backs that are super, super good that always go in the NFL. So no shock there that they've done that. And I do think that if you're going to look at the Indiana game, Chris, then you got to look at how healthy Penix is for the Indiana quarterback. I think if they were to replay Iowa and Penix was healthy, that's a close game. I'm not saying that Iowa wouldn't win. They didn't deserve that win. But Penix was like 60-70%. And he clearly is like that team's he makes them go. And he wasn't healthy. So if you're going to like wager that game or make a pick for it, I'd want to kind of see, okay, is Penix healthy? Because if he is, they have a chance. If he's not, and you're playing a Cincinnati team, who for the most part, it's always had a good defense. It's probably going to be an uphill battle. So I would lean towards Cincinnati.
See, I thought that was last year that he got hurt. I didn't realize did he re-injure something else? That's a good call.
Yeah, I just heard that from people, and then when the game was over, just from recaps, and people like saying like he played the game, but he wasn't himself. And you know, that's that weird spot where, you know, as a coach and a player, and like you want to go out and play, you want to help your team, but are you helping your team if you're at 60%? Well, you know, against Iowa, it wasn't the case. Now, is the back any better? Who knows? But nonetheless, yeah, definitely check up on the status of how he's feeling. Because the team Indiana was last year has not, they've not been resembling that team quite yet. And Cincinnati, as you know, they're about as sturdy as a defensive team as can be for with the skill level of the players they have. I Aside from that, though, I was just off, Chris. I was a bit too high. The Memphis Ole Miss over-under, I jokingly said 80. I was only off by a touchdown. It's 74. So my teasing prediction actually was within a touchdown with no extra point from being off. So if you want to watch, if you want to play a drinking game and you're going to drink every time a team scores a touchdown, I don't advise that. Maybe drink water and Gatorade, but expect a lot of points in the Ole Miss Tulane game, which should be a ton of fun for two offenses that want to drop 40 a game. That could be pretty enjoyable. That could be fun. Aside from that, though, I see, you know, as we were talking before the podcast, Colorado is a 2-point favorite against your Gophers. That should be, as you always like to tell our listeners, to find a close game to enjoy. Your Gophers have obviously, they played pretty damn good against Ohio State for the 45 minutes they won last week. And now they travel on the road for a Pac-12 Big Ten game. That should be a fun one to watch as well.
And they should have all their wide receivers. Chris Autumn Bell hasn't played yet this year, and he was by far the most experienced guy we have. We have two other guys, a transfer from A&M, who's hit the ground running. He got a little banged up, but he's going to be back this week for sure. Or I shouldn't say for sure, but sounds like it. But, and then we got Daniel Jackson, who's a young redshirt freshman. So they should have all three. Now let's see if they actually use the wide receiver talent too, rather than just trying to run the ball 60 times and grind it out. That'll be really, really a big game. Any other items before we get to this crafty, crappy pick of the week and get this puppy closed down?
Yes, just two last things. So South Carolina has been using an assistant coach as a quarterback because of quarterback injuries. And somehow South Carolina is 2-0 because they played a garbage team week one. They beat East Carolina, who's not a joke of a team, but they won last week. Now the past assistant coach, who's now the quarterback in Zeb Nolan, now has to go to Georgia. So the cute little storyline, obviously the guy's got to be a decent quarterback. He's 26 of 45 with 335 passing yards this year. He's done okay. But this assistant coach who was planning on holding a clipboard is now going into Athens, Georgia. If they win this game as a 31-point dog, I might just like buy a South Carolina jersey and have you tweet out a picture, because that would be the miracle I think you'd expect. But good luck. I think the fairy tale ending of a assistant coach turned QB being undefeated, I think that season comes to an end. And lastly, I see USC is an 8.5-point favorite on the road to Washington State. Washington State's been really bad this year. And again, as I mentioned, different spots for BYU. This could be a huge USC game. A lot of times in college football or in any professional sport, whether college, basketball, hockey, NBA, any sport, when you get rid of a coach, the teams can either kind of sink or swim. And a lot of times you see a team bounce back with a strong effort. I would assume USC is probably going to come out guns blazing with just kind of a fresh new start. You're playing a team who's down a lot this year, more than normal. So I won't be surprised to see USC maybe put together like a 20 to 30 point victory and kind of start to regroup. Because I'll just say this, Chris, we'll move on to the crap pick. Normally, you always, when a coach is fired, they always kind of put in an assistant coach who is like an OC or DC or like the special teams guy that the whole team loves. And you've seen so many coaches get hired because of how they did as an intern. So if you're looking for a team to pick this week, I think the USC angle, I'm sure whoever they've replaced Clay Helton with is a guy the players like. You could see a hell of a performance, I hope for. And maybe not be afraid to go wager on USC at the window. The -8.5, I think, is a pretty smart idea.
All right, we're at the 54-minute mark. Let's get it done in an hour. Hit me with the crafty, crappy pick of the week. Obviously, having a good start to the season so far.
Well, as I told you, we're going to go to Georgia. Now, I'm not going to have you pick a game that's a 31-point spread, because that would defeat the whole purpose of this segment. Instead, we're giving you a 4-point spread, and that is Georgia State battling the Charlotte 49ers. This game is at Center Park Stadium. Park is spelled P-A-R-C. I'm not sure if someone was drunk when spelling the name, or maybe that's the last name of a person, but Center Park in Atlanta, Georgia. So if you want to go to South Carolina at Georgia in Athens, or you want to go see Charlotte, Georgia State, that's a tough decision. Georgia tickets are 111. Georgia State tickets, you can get in for $5 this game, Chris. This is a 6 o'clock Central start. It's on ESPN Plus at a goofy spelling name stadium. And again, Georgia State -4, they're 0-2. Charlotte's 2-0. What does your gut tell you, my friend?
And you're not even going to talk about last week. That's bullshit, man. All right, so this is a 50-50, though, okay? According to ESPN's Football Power Index, 49.6 and 50.4. I mean, that Charlotte 49ers, are just barely what they feel of as the, as the favorite. Actually, you know what? My internet just, something happened with my phone, so I'm completely screwed. Okay, I don't have anything in front of me right now at all. Hold on, for whatever reason, ESPN just decided to go weird on me like it does at times, and I have nothing in front of me, but I can make up for it. Yeah, it's just frozen. Okay. This is going to take a second. Why don't you go over the battle and then I'll find this, okay? Why don't you alumni battle?
Yeah.
And then talk about last week, for Christ's sakes.
Last week, I mean, I guess the boys are 2-0. The boys are 2-0. I mean, you know, so last week's alumni battle wasn't impressive whatsoever. But actually get this, Chris. The first ever time I've ever Googled Charlotte alumni, I have no pictures up top. So normally when we do the alumni battles, it gives you pictures of all the people who were alumni for the school. There's legit no pictures for Charlotte alumni. My Lord, did we find a crafty game of the week. But with that being said, dear Lord, what an interesting situation. Georgia State, hold on. Georgia State alumni. As Chris and I are doing this. Yeah, normally I always get the plethora of alumni people with Google Pictures. And, man, did Google switch this? This is the first time I've ever not seen pictures loaded up. And I can't tell me that there's not famous people that have gone there. Georgia State alumni.
This is a great segment this week.
Dear God. All right, let's
shitty segment of the week. We're talking shit about these teams. Look at us. At least I got an excuse.
Google's messing with me. Okay. All right. Well, as you're pulling yours back up. All right. So we're going to break down this game. As Chris said, it's a 50-50 battle.
I got it now. Okay. I got it now. Right. I was just talking about the alumni. Anyway,
go ahead, my friend. Go ahead.
This is really bad. Here, I wanted to get it finished in an hour. That's not going to happen now. Sorry, guys. Anyway, this is a shitty matchup, but it's a tight, shitty matchup. There's no doubt about that. I do appreciate that. A 4-point favorite is pretty good. 64.5 on the over-under. And this is starting to get in the territory. You look at Georgia State, which is just weird to say, but Georgia State they're giving up 51 points a game and only putting up 13.5. Now, it should be said that they've already gone against Army, which can put up points and run the shit out of the ball. And then North Carolina, pissed off North Carolina, that lost to Virginia Tech. So they won 59-17. So some of this stuff is a little skewed. Charlotte doesn't necessarily have that excuse. But then again, their numbers are pretty good. They've given up both of them give up a ton of rushing yards, 268 and 229. Charlotte, 286. Man, you know, something that I like about Charlotte is last year they got their ass whooped by Duke, not in basketball, but in football. They got beat 53-19 to close out last year, basically, one of their last games. On Halloween at that. They turn around and get the dub 31-28 against Duke. That's enough for me. That is enough for me. I'm going to say Charlotte gets the W. I'm taking another road team. That's two road teams. I won the last one. We won the last one in OT last week, which my co-host failed to even. I mean, this stuff's not that easy here, Marshall, even though it seems easy, but it's not that easy. 2-0 on the season, I'm going the Charlotte 49ers, sir.
And so I think Google literally, I now have to like look up, I literally had to type in famous people. So famous people, and I hope we go 3-0. Let's keep the good times going,
brother.
All right,
let's try to tighten it up.
All right. It's a short list, my friend. Famous people who went to Charlotte 49ers University, Clay Aiken is the one name I realize, and the Moody Brothers, who are Grammy-nominated musicians. From Georgia State, notable alumni, we have, dear Lord.
It's got to be a running quarterback. Oh, no, that's Georgia Southern.
There's, good God. I mean, I don't know. Google literally, for the first time ever, just taking away my pictures. It's like they wanted to, you know what? They got
looks like you're
going
to have to do some research ahead of the show.
Oh, there's a Saints punter, Will Lutz, he's actually the Saints kicker.
That sums it up right there.
So we have Clay Aiken against Will Lutz, and yeah, this notable alumni. Dear God, this is the worst alumni battle of all time. I'm calling it a draw. Neither school has a proud alumni base. Google doesn't have pictures. For the first ever alumni battle, it was considered a null void competition. Neither team is being worth of representing.
All right, let's get out of here.
So on that note, USC finally got rid of Clay Helton. Thank God. In a couple of years, we'll be back to continue.
Yeah, we started
the
show
title.
With that, for Christ's sake.
I can see it. The future's coming, boys. The future's coming. So on that note, hottie toddy, watch Ole Miss, watch USC. It's going to be a great show next week, boys. As always, thank you for listening. We appreciate the support. Stay safe. Enjoy football this weekend. The boys will be back on Monday. We're out tonight. Peace.